Before Babylon, humans were digging, sculpting, and painting on this planet. Thousands of years later in Egypt, the tombs of pharaohs revealed glimpses into past civilizations. I'm Gina Kaufman. Today on Central Standard, we're going to investigate two museum exhibitions bringing ancient times and faraway places to us, right here in Kansas City. Come with us to the King Tut and Roads of Arabia exhibits. We'll explore artifacts that have survived journeys of thousands of miles and thousands of years. Plus, later in the hour, we know that natural history museums teach us about the Earth's species, but what do they tell us about ourselves? It's a morning at the museums, right after this news. Good morning and welcome to Central Standard. It's rainy and gray outside, making this a perfect day for ducking into a museum or two. We're fortunate this morning to have Robert Cohen here with us from the Nelson Atkins Museum of Art, where he serves as curator of the art of the ancient world. He also teaches at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. Hi, Robert. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me here.
Well, right now at the Nelson Atkins, you've got an exhibit titled Roads of Arabia, which is a fascinating collection of objects excavated in what is now Saudi Arabia. Can you explain the underlying premise of that show?
The underlying premise is we're presenting a wow show. What we wanted to do was to bring to Kansas City art that is rarely ever seen out of Saudi Arabia, art that is very, very different from the rest of the art of the ancient world, and indeed some fabulous works of art from the Islamic world. And what we wanted to do was to really serve as a bridge between Kansas City and Riyadh.
Well, I want to get into more detail about that show in a second, but we're talking about two local exhibitions this morning. You were also involved in the Discovery of King Tut exhibit at Union Station. What was your involvement in that project?
My involvement was that I was called up about 2 weeks earlier, and they said, how would you like to help us with the exhibition? Why doesn't the Nelson Atkins and Union Station get together and work with each other? And so I was asked to come in and make some comments about the exhibition, work with them a bit. It was a fabulous collaboration that we have with Union Station now.
So kind of summarize for us what people will see if they go to the King Tut exhibit.
Oh, it's really fabulous. And I mean, it is absolutely, absolutely perfect for kids if you're tired of having your kids watching the Disney Channel or these Dance Mom show, these terrible things on television.
Yeah, nothing dancing there.
My God, bring them down to the King Tut show. This is perfect for families. If you got an 8-year-old, a 10-year-old, a 12-year-old, 13-year-old, if you have the heart of a 12-year-old in you and an adult, it's fabulous, because what you get to see is the opening of King Tut's tomb with chariots turned over, with boxes laden of food knocked over, the whole interior of the tomb as Carter saw it in 1922.
So Carter, tell us who he is.
Oh, Howard Carter was the excavator of this tomb. He was from England. He came from a lower middle class family, and he was an excellent artist. And he was asked by the British Museum to come down to Egypt to do a little bit of work there. He caught the bug and stayed basically in Egypt for the rest of his life, became an excellent excavator, and linked up with a man named Lord Carnarvon, very, 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 very wealthy Englishman. He was an earl, and this man, Carnarvon, supported Carter from 1917 onwards to excavate the Valley of the Kings with the hope of finding the tomb of King Tut. And indeed, after 6 years in this valley, sometimes temperatures reaching 120, 130 degrees, Carter actually found what he was looking for, the tomb of King Tut. It was an extraordinary event.
Well, we'll be getting back to that, too. But so we're talking about two shows here, and they take very different approaches to sharing archaeological discoveries. In Roads of Arabia, you have original objects on display in an elegant museum setting. These are pieces of stone carved by the hands of humans who walked this planet thousands of years ago. But the setting is clearly a museum of today. You learn about the original context through text, maps, videos. Meanwhile, at Union Station, you have everything as it would have appeared in King Tut's tomb when it was first discovered, giving the viewer a real sense of the wonder and amazement that Carter would have experienced. But these aren't the actual objects. You aren't looking at the real chariots and figurines. You're looking at painstakingly rendered reproductions. Can you talk a little bit about the significance of those different choices?
Well, I think both choices are excellent. And the King Tut show, it's fabulous because, you know, you walk into the tomb and you see the tomb exactly as it was when Carter found it. And when Carter found it, it was a little bit of a mess. The tomb had been robbed at least twice. And the priests responsible for keeping things in good order merely kind of flopped over and flipped over this and that. And things were in a little bit of a state of disorder. So you find a chariot turned totally over on its side. You find boxes knocked over. You find chairs kind of pushed away under couches. It's an extraordinary experience.
How was the discovery documented at the time? Was the documentation what allowed the sort of setup to be reproduced?
Oh, the documentation was fabulous, in large part because, drum roll, the camera was being used. Photography was being used in a big way in this excavation. And as a matter of fact, they brought over somebody from the Metropolitan Museum of Art to work on documenting this with the camera. And we have fabulous photographs of where everything was found. So recreating it is possible. And this is really one of the first times that you have archaeologists using photography to document what they have found in a very meaningful kind of way.
There was part of the story that kind of freaked me out when I went to the exhibit, which is that when Carter and his team actually entered the chambers, that there was a cobra that killed a canary.
Oh, my goodness. This is the canary story.
And yes,
you cannot believe these canaries.
I mean,
it's look, there are lots of stories that circulate. And the biggest one, of course, is the curse of King Tut. And the curse of King Tut was that he who opens the tomb will, you know, die. And actually what happened was is that the patron, Lord Carnarvon, who was responsible for bankrolling this huge 6-year expedition, about 6-7 months after the tomb was uncovered, oops, he dies. And he dies because of a mosquito bite he gets in Egypt. And a few days later, he's shaving. And when he shaves, he breaks open this small bug bite. This causes a blood infection. And within 2 weeks, he was dead. So the curse of King Tut was a big story for many, many months. And indeed, in America, you had on the floor of our Congress in Washington, D.C., congressmen demanding that we investigate mummies in America. Were they dangerous?
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting, though, because this idea that these all of these objects buried with King Tut were intended in some way to protect him. And this idea that something might happen to you when you go and dismantle this collection of things, it doesn't it sort of has some resonance with the idea that these things are here as part of a belief system. And what is our role? I mean, what is our role when we look at them in a museum or when we study them later outside of that context?
I think the biggest role that we have is to understand what these people were about. What were they doing? What were their belief systems? And the remarkable thing about King Tut's tomb is that you can reconstruct to a fair degree what these people believed in 3,350 years ago. And that is just an extraordinary thing. And their belief system is not entirely different from our own. There are certain neat parallels with what we believe in.
Such as?
Well, for instance, there was the belief that if your name was spoken, if your name was inscribed, that would keep you alive in the next world. And this is very, very close to our own idea of it's important that after my death, I be remembered. For some reason, it's as if the remembrance of one is going to keep them alive. This is precisely the idea that the Egyptians had, said in a slightly different way. It's very, very contemporary in character.
Well, let's revisit the Roads of Arabia exhibition, because there are also, this is a very different approach to sharing objects. And in fact, many of these objects have been discovered fairly recently in Saudi Arabia.
Yes, indeed. Actually, some were discovered not but 3-4 years ago. A man who owned quite a few camels was using a backhoe to dig an artificial pond for his camels and comes across what seems to be a settlement slash sanctuary from around 5,000, 6,000, maybe 7,000, 8,000, 9,000 years ago.
And to his credit, he calls the backhoes to a halt.
Yes, yes. And he goes to town finding more things. Archaeologists have been surveying the area for the last few years. And just at the last moment, it was possible about 2 years ago to introduce these objects into the show. So really, for the first time, people have an opportunity to see images of what seems to be a horse, or maybe it's a donkey or a mule. It's an extraordinary opportunity. We never thought to be so lucky as to find something from 4,000 BC in Saudi Arabia, something so beautiful and as wonderful as this equid sculpture.
What does this sculpture tell us?
The sculpture tells us, really, it confuses us. We don't understand it. We have what seems to be a horse that's about 3-4 feet long. It's made out of sandstone. It's sculpted in front and back on the sides. And why was this made? We don't understand it. It seems to be from a sanctuary. We don't even know how it stood up. Was it meant to stand as an eternal offering to a god or goddess? I think that's probably what its function was. I mean, if you sacrifice a horse or a donkey, well, you know, it's gone the next day. The best thing to do is to carve it out of stone and let it stand forever as a gift to the gods. And now, 7,000 years later, it's in Kansas City. It still is there. It still is that gift.
Yeah, in this case, you're standing in front of this actual object that some human thousands and thousands of years ago painstakingly created. That is a different kind of experience.
Yes, and it's a fabulous one, because it makes us wonder about these people. Who were they? The communication that the Nelson offers over a 7,000-year period, it's an extraordinary opportunity. It's like reading a great book. It's confronting these people, trying to understand them. It's in a certain way almost hearing them. Because look, this is a largely pre-literate society, and their best way of communication is with art. And our job is to detect what the message is. And sometimes on a very emotional level, you can pick it up.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Central Standard on KCUR 89.3 FM, streaming live at kcur.org. I'm Gina Kaufman, here with Robert Cohen from the Nelson Atkins Museum of Art, talking to us about the Roads of Arabia exhibit there, as well as the King Tut exhibit at Union Station, for which he was on some level a consultant. Give us a call at 816-235-2888 if you have a question for Dr. Cohen. Maybe you've been to one of these exhibits and there's something that stood out to you. You have your chance to ask the curator a question. 816-235-2888. Robert, we were just talking about these animal sculptures that were excavated very recently in Saudi Arabia. I think in today's world can mistakenly have the impression that we know everything there is to know about these past civilizations, that the discoveries have all been made and that they're just collecting dust in our collective conscience or something. But in fact, you know, these are discoveries made in the 2000s. Have they changed our notion of what these civilizations were like? And give us some examples of that.
My gosh, everything has changed. Everything has been totally turned over in the last 20, 30 years. There's a period in our history called the Neolithic period, 9,600 BC to about 3,000 BC. This is a time when we've just learned how to domesticate grain, domesticate sheep, all those kinds of creatures, and we now can live in villages and settle down for a while and maybe go hunting over the weekend. And the art of this period, we are just beginning to discover fabulous things discovered in Saudi Arabia, things that we could not conceive of years and years ago. Great, what seemed to be ancestor images, images of ancestors that were revered, worshipped, now stand in Kansas City. These are images that are 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 years old. We couldn't conceive of them as even existing maybe 2-3 decades ago. You go up to southeastern Turkey, fabulous discoveries at a site called Göbekli Tepe, circles of images of humans. We didn't think that this was possible.
Why not?
It just the Neolithic was a period when we still thought of people grunting a lot. Maybe it's like parts of northern New Jersey today. I mean, it's a very, very different world. We had traces of art, but in the last 20 years, 30 years, there's been an explosion of new information. And in America, we just don't think about the Neolithic. What happened before the Greeks and the Romans? Well, there were the Egyptians, the pyramids. But before the pyramids, well, people weren't really doing anything. That's how we conceived of things. But in fact, you find highly evolved cultures in this period. And we can bring this now to Kansas City. This art does not exist in major museums in America. You're not going to find it in Boston. You're not going to find it in New York or California or up in Chicago. We have it here at the Nelson Atkins. It's an extraordinary opportunity to see a civilization that we did not know existed, an art that is as compelling as a Mondrian is today.
Ali Al-Gaban, who co-curated the exhibit, is quoted as saying, "Most Westerners believe that Saudi Arabia is only a desert land with oil wells. They don't know that the country was a bridge between the East and the West. We played this role in the 4th millennium BCE, and we continue to play it." How do you think, in response to this comment, how do you think learning about the ancient world informs our understanding of people living in today's world?
My goodness. We still want to smell good, okay? What happens is with Saudi Arabia in antiquity, Saudi Arabia is an enormous highway between southern Arabia, Yemen, and the rest of the civilized world. We're dealing with the Mediterranean, Iran, Iraq. Look, in antiquity, bathing cost a lot of money. You couldn't put a bathtub in your house. Plumbing was very, very expensive. And so most people wanted to smell really good. And where do you get perfume? Where do you get incense? You get it from southern Arabia. You get it from modern day Yemen. Our friends, frankincense and myrrh, they come from Yemen. But how do you get it from southern Arabia up to downtown Damascus, to Babylon, to Ur, to Athens, to the center of Rome, or even to Pompeii, or to Alexandria, Egypt? Caravans. Caravans going from southern Arabia all the way through the rest of Arabia up to ports in northwestern, well, let's say in the Sinai and in Egypt, and then it goes up to Damascus and Rome and Athens. This is the kind of thing that helps us smell good. basically, these people were selling cologne. And it was in the form of myrrh. Frankincense was an incense. You could use it for incense. It was big, big commodity in those days. And Saudi Arabia served as a bridge between Yemen and the rest of the civilized world. It's extraordinary. Today, obviously, Arabia is an important source of oil, but in antiquity, it was basically an enormous highway, a very profitable one.
How do the politics of the Middle East today play into archaeological work being done in that region? Or does archaeology just somehow magically know no politics?
Oh, archaeology is keenly aware of politics. If you go back into the history of the discovery of Herculaneum in Pompeii, you have kings up in Naples who are pushing these excavations. because it shows that their court is highly cultured. And many excavations that are done are, you know, frankly, to promote the past. But also, you have to understand that Saudi Arabia, the universities there are very, very sophisticated. And what they are interested in is exploring the past and getting a greater understanding of their own land. And what could be more simple than that? My goodness, I go digging in my backyard, you know, to plant a tree, and I find part of a pot. I find part of a pot. And it's like, how did this get there? What's the history behind this thing? It looks like it's a good 100, 120 years old. What was going on in my backyard? People are curious about their past. But, you know, the interesting thing is you look at the discovery of King Tut's tomb, and that was deeply, deeply embroiled in Egyptian politics of the 1920s. And those politics are very, very similar to what's going on today in modern Egypt.
How so?
Well, what you have going on in Egypt is all this enormous political disturbance. Are you linking with the West? Are you going to be an independent country? What is going to be your relationship with the rest of the Near East? And these are precisely the same issues that were raised when Carter was excavating. You have to remember that in the early 20th century, basically Egypt is a protectorate of the English government. And you have good old Howard Carter and Lord Carnarvon, proper kinds of Brits, excavating in the Valley of the Kings from 1917 onwards. And it is after World War I that Egyptians start saying, well, we're really not very happy with all these Brits here. There are riots in Cairo. There are riots throughout the southern part of Egypt. And at the same time, you have Carnarvon and Carter excavating, oblivious to all of this, down in the Valley of the Kings. Think of it. Independence is achieved in February 1922, independence from England. In November 1922, an entire tomb is discovered with such an amazing collection of artifacts, all belonging to the Pharaoh King Tut. The Egyptians were always there. What are the Brits doing there? And of course, Carter wants to keep half of what he finds. And up until 1917, 1920, he could. But now you find the Egyptians saying, well, wait a minute, this is our territory. This is ours. This belongs to us. Wait a minute, you can't take half of this material. You can't take this material away, even though you discovered it. And King Tut's tomb becomes kind of a political football. It's a fascinating kind of thing how this works. Ultimately, Carter gets nothing out of the tomb for himself or Lord Carnarvon.
Well, I want to get away from politics shortly just because we have a caller on the line who has a question for you. But one last political question. What about the politics of exhibiting all of this stuff?
The Egyptian material?
Actually, I'm thinking of at the Nelson, the Roads of Arabia.
The Roads of Arabia, yeah. I mean, we are very, very happy to have this opportunity to bring to Kansas City art from 9,000 years ago, art from 7,000, 5,000, 1,000 years ago. We regard ourselves as being in the neutral zone, that the politics of one nation at one time or another, it's interesting, it's important, but basically we are a fine art museum and we look towards the greatest creativity of humans to find out where they can lead us. We are a bridge to other countries, to other worlds.
Let's hear from Chad in Belton, Missouri. Hi, Chad.
Hello. Good morning. I have a question for you. I'm curious to know who gets to decide how close a viewer or visitor can get to the pieces? Is it the value of the pieces or their age or...
A proximity is determined by arm length. That's the best rule of thumb. with stone sculpture, you would think that touching a stone sculpture isn't going to cause any problems. But actually, we have all sorts of grime on our hand. We have most of all oil on our hand. And you get enough hands touching a sculpture, and the sculpture begins to look a little bit different. The stone begins to wear slightly. It gets grimy. It's a mess. Other material, for instance, silver, bronze, when exposed to the natural air, it picks up a lot of things you don't want to pick up. Silver begins to tarnish. Bronze gets kind of strange-looking patina. Chemical reactions happen on the surface. If they're exposed to any kind of moisture, then you're in real trouble. And so a lot of times with bronzes and with silver and other metals, we put them under a glass vitrine. We want people to get as close as possible, but the rule is don't touch. And if it's sensitive to the atmosphere, then keep it under a vitrine. Most of all, that we want people to get close and enjoy it.
When you're getting close, it does sometimes feel like there's something precarious about how close you're standing to this remaining memory of a past civilization. You know what I mean? There are three huge red sandstone human figurines on display that were unearthed pretty recently, but I remember feeling like I was impossibly close to them.
And wonderfully close to them. And the Nelson Atkins does have a system of protection. We have security officers. We want people to get close to the objects, but not to the extent that it endangers them. And look, these objects were meant to be supposed to get close to them. Many of them are silverware from banquets where you were actually meant to hold them. But we do keep them under a vitrine. But the glass, it's pretty invisible, and you can feel like they're almost there.
When it comes to the King Tut exhibit at Union Station, the emphasis seems to be more on the story of the king buried in the tomb and the archaeologist who discovered him there than about any specific object. Maybe this is a weird thing to say, but it feels almost like a love story being told as you progress through there.
Oh, my gosh. For Carter, the excavator, and basically for all archaeologists, it is a love story. You hit the nail right on the head. At a certain point, when you're excavating, when you're studying material, it becomes yours, this mystical connection. It's a wonderful experience.
Courtship and pursuit.
Yes.
Robert Cohen, it has been such an honor to chat with you this morning. We hope to have you back again sometime.
Thank you.
The exhibits we just heard about are The Discovery of King Tut at Union Station and Roads of Arabia at the Nelson Atkins Museum of Art. Central Standard is going to take a break, but when we come back, we'll be speaking with the director of KU's Natural History Museum. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stay tuned.